For September the 12th, 2025, we talk about Silk Song, Schedule 1, the Mugenics gameplay reveals, and much more. Welcome to Level 557. My name's Kay Ross.
My name's Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome, everyone. We were going to have Dennis. Something changed. The program we use that is not going to get free advertising is not letting him in. So we spent like a half hour trying to troubleshoot, and we got to go on. We have to leave him behind.
It's like a phasmophobia ghost in the machine situation.
Yes, it's like trying to get the ghost box or whatever the fuck that is to work. I still drives me insane, that game. Yeah. yeah, we're here. I don't know what to do for the opening, so I'm just gonna say, Ben, what you been up to?
I have a busy-ish week where I'm doing things like every weeknight, which is unusual. I would say the coolest and most relatable one is on Thursday I'm seeing a screening of The Thing in theaters.
So, which one?
The good one.
Yeah.
I would argue technically there are two good ones, but one is much better.
Yeah. Okay. Much better.
The old black and white one was actually decent. It's not nearly as good as John Carpenter's, but
the old one's from its era, but it's still good. Yeah, I was like, are you seriously? Am I watching somebody who's gonna be a shooter for the 2011 one?
No, yeah. No.
So do you want to know what's wild about that, Ben? We're recording an episode about The Thing tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Topical.
Yeah. Nice. And just completely by coincidence. I have no idea why they're showing it up where you are, other than Seattle is cool.
They're I'll answer that question. They're showing a bunch of like kind of classic movies throughout the month. So it's just like each day has like a screening of a movie that like Interstellar or like There Will Be Blood, stuff like that. So
oh, cool.
Yeah, I don't know why they're doing it, but I'm not going to ask questions. I'm just going to go check it out.
Yeah. So, good.
I'm just curious, the episode you're doing, is it on the game or?
No, God, no. that game is a nightmare. Yeah. So we did an episode about the movie on Bonfireside Chat back during the Bloodborne season, because it's vaguely Lovecraftian. We were just looking for an excuse to talk about The Thing because we didn't have a show to do it.
I mean, it is an amazing movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But we're doing it on Film Mobile now because we've done the other movies in the Apocalypse trilogy, John Carpenter's. So
nice.
It's just weird for our horror movie show that we haven't talked about what might be one of the best of all time. Mm. Are you taking Mimi?
No, I'm going with friends from Cincinnati. I think she has a dinner plans that night. So
cool.
I'm not sure how that movie would land with her as well. So yeah, that could be an experiment for later. But I agree, though. It's like if you're going to show a horror movie, it's like that Hereditary. Those are the ones that are really good, but they might mess you up if you show it to the wrong person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a movie about some dudes having fun. Mm-hmm. What men are allowed to have hobbies?
I just love the premise. I realize this is the least relevant thing about the movie, but I love the premise that like every Arctic research base has a flamethrower.
Oh my gosh! When they bust open the cabinet full of shotguns, it's like what are you doing? Like the flamethrower, I get, like, you know, for clearing a path or, you know, stuff gets frozen over. I don't know what those shotguns are for.
Cabin fever.
Yep. Want to make sure you've got everything you need to lose your fucking mind.
Did you ever get into the comics at all?
No.
apparently they're fairly decent.
No. Well, I hope you have a good time, Ben.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I'm curious to see, because my memory of the movie is like the last like 20 minutes drags a little bit. So I'm curious to see if that is the same or if that is a false memory.
My take on it would be it's one of those situations where I think the ending of the movie and the last 20 minutes are excellent. However, in order to land the tone they want for the end, it has to kind of drag, if that makes sense.
Also, like, it climaxes so well with the wire scene.
Yes. Yeah.
And then it meanders a little bit after that. The blood test. Blood test, Ben. Yeah.
Everything between the blood test and the final scene, that's where it drags a little bit for me, I think.
Yeah. That is useful.
Yeah. Well, I've never seen it on the big screen, so I'm envious.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I'll update in the backstage how it is.
So. Cool. Moxie, how about you?
Had a fun weekend. Went to there is a event in town, the Big Dyke Market.
Okay.
A whole bunch of basically a lesbian craft show. It's sweet. Basically what it was. Which was a lot of fun, just a bunch of like kitschy, arts and crafts, all approximately, I think, all of the carabiners in the city.
Of course.
Being sold there.
Parking was just U-Hauls as far as the eye could see.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of first dates then, huh?
Yep. that was fun. It was also kind of funny because it was right next to the Washington, D.C. State Fair.
Okay.
Which is the most pitiful state fair I have ever seen. It was...
they're trying to hold it in secret. They don't want people to think they're a state.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, how do you have a state fair if you're a district?
Yeah, I mean, I guess technically district fair, but you know. Okay. But it was basically... a
special economic zone fair. Yes.
It was basically just like a relatively small block party. Like, okay. It was fine, but I think my objection to it is I don't think it can be considered a state fair unless there is at least one animal.
You gotta be reading them hogs.
Yeah, exactly. So that was just kind of funny. And then it was right next to the Alamo Draft House, which I'd never gone to before.
I didn't know there was one in D.C.
Awesome. Yeah, there is. I think my favorite thing is in the lobby inside, it has a Hall of Presidents with, portraits of tons of presidents, except it's all movie presidents.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty great. But yeah, so Highest to Low.
Oh, God. Dave from Dave.
Yeah, and present from Air Force One. Mm-hmm. Independence Day. All of that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Highest to Lowest, which is Spike Lee's new movie.
Okay.
I'd actually never seen a Spike Lee movie before.
Oh shit. Like Run, Don't Walk. I mean, like obviously Do the Right Thing, but even like, I mean, Inside Man, you gotta watch Inside Man. It's one of the best bank heist movies of all time.
Yeah. And apparently this was the, first time him and, Denzel Washington had made a movie since Inside Man.
Okay.
It's basically a remake, or I don't know, remake's not the right word, adaptation maybe, of Kurosawa's High and Low.
Okay.
Which is not one of his samurai movies, but one of his like contemporary crime things.
Mm-hmm.
And so really good movie, but rich CEO is trying to regain control of his company to keep it from getting like bought by venture capitalists, and you know, so takes out a bunch of loans, gets a lot of money, and then his son gets kidnapped and held for ransom.
Okay.
And so, like, has to navigate how to handle that, whether he's going to pay the ransom, stuff like that. You know, very, very thriller stuff.
Relatable character as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, surprisingly, for being a super wealthy CEO, it manages to make it fairly relatable.
Nice.
But yeah, you know, just, yeah, really good movie. I want to see, you know, more of Spike Lee's movies just to see kind of how it compares, that sort of thing. Cause, you know, it was really well done, you know, well acted, had a number of very interesting, like, almost like pseudo dream logic scenes that were kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, yeah, highly recommended it. Honestly enjoyed it a lot more than I normally, or than I expected to, because that's not exactly my normal, like, type of music, or music movie.
No.
I'm usually more of kind of a action martial arts movie type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I had to go and look, because I was like, did Spike Lee try to remake Old Boy?
He did. Well, he tried to. Yeah,
it
was released.
Hence the qualifier. Yeah, yeah. It was just like, so this is like, as for, of those two that I know of him trying to kind of take the work, you know, these masterworks. Yeah,
yeah. Huh. Yeah, I think he might have done at least one other Kurosawa movie as well, although I'm not certain.
Okay.
But yeah, recommend it. It's yeah, just really good movie.
Cool. Yeah, I don't have anything cinematic. so just gonna move past that expectation. Yeah, not a whole lot going on. Just a lot of doing today and today alone. I imported and like retitled and fixed the text on 1,027 episodes of Everything to Guppy.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that is the biggest show that I have to bring in. And this, as part of this audio host migration, next biggest is going to be when I do, when I do Days of Future Cast, but, I've not checked the total of episodes I need to bring in and check, but I think that I'm like more than halfway through. I have to be. If God let me be.
Ever anything that can be automated, or I will write you a program to do, help you out with any of that. If there's ever anything you need to do 1,000 times.
I don't trust automation for something wrong. Like, because like, you know, if I had access to any kind of like hooks, you know, to the actual data or whatever, this is just like you bring it in and then just, you know, opening up every tab and then making changes to the title and making change, you know, putting in the, you know, the number, and like, yeah, I could see that being automated, but all of the titles are different. You know, so it's hard to say like replace this many or prepend any of that. It's like,
you
fuck that up and then suddenly you're going back and trying to undo all of the damage of the automation.
Yeah.
I'm super paranoid because I've done a number of things where I've tried to automate something and I just made more work for myself.
So, yeah. Sounds scary.
Yeah. Yeah. So doing that, tried to mow my lawn yesterday, but mower just straight up took a shit, and all the mower repair places that I called were like, oh, we don't do mower repair anymore. I'm like, what? Yeah, we don't do that. Just the parts delays. We ended up it took away from the other parts of our business. I'm like, what other business? You're a mower place.
Yeah.
You need to get one of those like push mowers, you know, that's just like the barrel with the blades on it.
I'm on like a third of an acre. I have this big lawn that I don't fucking want, and an expensive temperamental machine that will just cover me in oil at random intervals if I look at it wrong.
I mean, to be fair, the manual mower is not temperamental or complicated. So
it's a spinning blade. It's a spinning blade by your ankles and feet.
It is the centerpiece of a lot of horror scenes and movies. So.
Yes. Yeah.
So. Really?
If it's in a movie, then yeah.
it's probably going to dice somebody up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, so I'm just really kind of frustrating stuff, honestly. I'm happy to be here talking about video games and stuff. And to do that, we have to do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the last period of time or so. I'm going to go first.
Silk Song check. Or not. All right, never mind.
Yeah. No. I'm going to go first by proposing a title. I know how we can really boost ratings. It'll probably get me beheaded, but I think this episode's title should be Silk Song True Ending Explained.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine with that.
I haven't beaten Silk Song.
Well, I mean...
I've cleared like the first like three. I'm in the docks area.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
So are all three of us?
I have not started Silk Song.
Ben has not started Silk Song, but Moxie, you have.
Yeah, I just made it to. I don't think this is where I just made it to Lace.
Okay, so you're even further than me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe Lace is a boss.
Yeah, the boss of the docks.
Okay, yeah, so I haven't gotten her. I just got the dash.
Yes, so you got to the point where the game becomes playable.
Okay.
How many hours have each of you put into it so far?
I haven't checked the clock. Probably like 3, 4, something like that.
Yeah, 4 or 5, something like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's a long game, so that's probably barely enough to talk about it. But like, I don't know. Moxie, have you played Hollow Knight?
I did. Yeah, I did. I don't know. I did not beat Hollow Knight. Okay. And I did not make to end game of Hollow Knight. I don't know. Beyond that, I don't know. Like, I played a fair amount of Hollow Knight, I guess.
Okay.
I'm in the same boat, yeah.
Yeah. I've beaten Hollow Knight, but I've not played any of the DLCs. Basically, the last time I played it was back when we covered it for Bonfireside Chat, like 2017, something like that. But, like, my impression of it is this is Hollow Knight. Like... It's, you know, there are people who are talking about these big differences that they can see, and it's possible that I just haven't run into them. But like, instead of pogoing straight down, you pogo at a 45. Mm-hmm. And that's like the biggest difference that I've seen so far. And I've seen people complain about boss run-ups, and I totally understand complaining about boss run-ups. People are calling it the Dark Souls 2 of Hollow Knight, to which I say, yep. You mean it's peak?
is that the time it takes to run from like the save point to the boss, like that sort of thing?
Yes. So okay. Like Elden Ring, they do a pretty good job of putting a bonfire right outside of the boss arena. Mm. Like even Dark Souls 3, you ended up having boss runs where, you know, you had to clear a little gauntlet, or more accurately, run by everybody to get from your respawn point to the boss.
Okay.
Yeah. And I would say in this one, full disclosure is I think this game's really cool. I think the story, the aesthetics, the presentation, all that stuff is good. I am not impressed by the gameplay.
Ooh.
Dive into that and like how it didn't meet your expectations after Hollow Knight.
I think it feels way too difficult in ways that aren't additive. And I'd say one example of that, I think, is the boss runs, and in particular, the fact that like every enemy is a damage sponge. And so like, at least from what I've seen, like I've had very few situations where I can meaningfully run back past enemies. So like usually when I'm doing a boss run, there is a significant amount of platforming and combat and stuff like that I'm having to do on the way.
Okay.
Do you find that's true too, just like in general of like restarting from checkpoints, like it takes a long time to get to the next one, or?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I'd say it's just, I think the other thing that I think's a problem that I think's actually maybe the greater problem is, you know, it has a Souls style, you have to go back and recover your in this game it's rosary beads.
Yeah.
The difference is that the Souls games are kind of tuned around where like if you lose your stuff, you'll pretty quickly probably be back where you're at. Whereas in this, like only some very few of the enemies actually give any souls. Most enemies don't give any souls. And the ones that do give like 5 souls, and things cost like between, from what I've seen, between like 50 and 100 souls. Or, I'm sorry, 50 and 500 souls.
Yeah. The rosary beads, they're also like, there are hard rosary beads you can get. I'm using Dark Souls terminology, the hard souls kind of thing. Just consumables you can get for like little infusions that won't go away when you die. I've not run into this. I've always been able to get back to my cocoon.
Balance.
That's
left behind.
Yeah. So I always have been able to get back. I think more what I'm thinking though is there's a lot of situations where if this was a Souls game, I just wouldn't bother.
Okay.
Where it's like, you know, I went to some place. It was clearly not some place I was meant to be yet, and like normally I'd just be like, all right, fine, I'm gonna write off those souls. But when it's something where it's like, no, those are souls that I've gathered over the course of like hours upon hours, I have to like fight my way back only to immediately turn around and go back to where I started.
Yeah. Is there not a way to like bank the souls that you've collected at any sort of area in the game, or
spend them? You're not. So like the one of the big distinctions is you're not spending your rosary beads to level up.
Okay.
You know, like you are using it to get not equipment, but like you can buy like badges that kind of act like equipment. You're buying maps. You know, I think there's some consumables you can buy, maybe like they're all like progression. Okay. Related more than anything.
Yeah, you can convert your rosary beads into what you call them, like hard whatever.
Yeah, you can get the rosary strings, like
but there's like a 25% surcharge on it.
Yeah, basically almost exactly the same as Sekiro, actually. Sekiro had a very similar system for banking your whatever they called it. I just call it souls. Yeah.
I think one of the biggest things is the couple of things I've seen that I personally find kind of frustrating is they've significantly increased the damage that enemies do, like in Hollow Knight. Non-boss enemies generally do 1 point of damage, and bosses do 2. Here, a lot of the non-boss enemies do 2 damage.
A regular bug in the environment will do 2. I did notice that.
And you only start out with 5 HP, and then the other thing is your heal ability in Hollow Knight basically when you hold down the heal button and it heals over time, so you just heal what you need. In this, you spend all of your accrued, basically mana, and heal for 3 points. So I think part of the problem, I think, is it creates a situation where the healing being all or nothing makes it difficult to heal if you're just 1 or 2 points down, but having so little life and enemies dealing so much damage means that if you aren't at max life, you can just almost immediately be killed. Yeah.
You can take two, three hits on in a combo and then right. be down.
The other thing I was going to say is, as far as I can tell, there is no iframes when you get hit.
There are iframes.
Are there? Okay. They're at least very, very brief.
Yeah.
Like, it is extremely common to get like hit and then, you know, immediately hit again.
So to address one of those things, I'm not being an apologist for it. I just have seen screenshots of later in the game. So like what you're describing with the mana bar being too short and kind of it being, you know, all or nothing, like that was the case in Hollow Knight as well. At the start, you only had enough mana for one heal charge. And that is something that gets upgraded. I think both the length of your mana bar and the rate at which it recovers as well.
Yeah. And that is, I think one thing is, was having a conversation with some people on this. Like, I don't know that I would necessarily just straight up like say this game is too difficult. I think it's more, it feels to me like there's a number of, decisions that maybe weren't great decisions, and mm-hmm. and I think maybe part of it is like the fact that it feels like they went full end game difficulty from the start, but then have a conventional Metroidvania progression in terms of like you not starting out with the tools you really need to play the game.
I'm not feeling full endgame difficulty at all.
Well, not endgame difficult, but yeah. You know what I mean. Like, it feels like in my opinion, they should have toned down the difficulty until you unlock some of the abilities that really allow you to interact with that difficulty.
Yeah. Hmm. I remember there being the early game struggle in Hollow Knight. I think like where I kind of come down on it again with very few, you know, hours into it, but like what's sticking out is diminutivize it or whatever. It feels like Hollow Knight to me. And I went back and recently like replayed the first few hours of Hollow Knight. And, I also kind of like hit the struggle there. And I can notice things like you're taking a little bit more damage, than you do in previous ones. And I can see like, oh yeah, that's like a little bit of a bummer. Like that took me more tries than it ought to have, but it all feels so marginal to me. Like it is a few of those decisions that are not optimal, but it doesn't feel like it is beyond the pale of like getting used to it or overcoming it or hitting that point that you do when you sit down with any new Souls game, especially if a kind you haven't played in a while, you know? And you know, you struggle until you get a couple of bosses and you get like the one ability. Like that to me just sounds like video games to me.
Hmm. Yeah. I think if I had to characterize it, I'd say, I think it's more to me, less the overall difficulty and more, it feels like fairly often a lot of the maybe a little rough mechanics kind of align to create situations that don't feel fair. And so, you know, just things where it'll be like, you know, the game really, really loves environmental damage in a way that I think's a little excessive. And so just things where it'll be like, I'll get hit by an enemy, you know, get flung into another enemy and then get flung into spike traps and just instantly die. And so, you know, it's things where like that in of itself isn't really that bad, but it's more just like the ratio of deaths that feel unfair to deaths where it's like, all right, I saw what I did wrong and I learned from it, feels much higher than in like a Dark Souls or something.
Yeah, I'm going to come across like a broken record about the, you know, the situation you're describing, mm-hmm. with environmental damage and stuff, you know, stuff like that. That sounds like Hollow Knight to me.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that early, the early game coming to bite you before you get your sea legs, right?
Yeah. I think that's reasonable. I mean, I would a little bit say like, I don't think Hollow Knight was great because of its gameplay.
Okay.
But that being said, like, I don't want to overstate, like, I am having a good time. I feel like everything else the game does is, you know, just excellent in my opinion.
So I have a question about, is the docks like the first main area of the game, or is that, or have you gone through a couple different biomes at this point?
There's like a tutorial. There is like a cathedral kind of area that you kind of start out in. You get to the hub, and then there's a lava area. There's like a grassy area above that you dip into for a little bit, and then there's the docks. So yeah, it's like area 3.5.
Okay. Yeah, I would say, I would almost characterize it as being like, it is the area you generally go to after the first real boss.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not doubting that it'll get, you know, really frustrating later on. I don't doubt when people say like, oh my gosh, this boss is, you know, a huge wall. It's funny to me because difficulty discourse, you can set your watch by it, mm-hmm. you know, and I almost wonder if there's like a click economy that is driving a lot of it with, just like everybody's talking about how hard this is, and like people are review bombing it because of the difficulty and saying,
yeah. And I don't think it's, well, I mean, obviously that's just a dumb thing to do in general, but like even to a degree, like I don't think that's a rational, you know what I mean? Like it's not that hard.
Yeah. So when I think about it, and especially when I'm playing, and it feels just like straight up the middle, like, hey, this is more Hollow Knight. And I see people referring to it as, you know, oh, it's Dark Souls 2, it's a disappointment, etc. Like, I have to wonder if Team Cherry was so heads down and they just made the game that they wanted to make as the makers of Hollow Knight. They made more Hollow Knight, that if they just made that and people are coming back and it's the same river, but they're different and they're holding that against the river, I guess.
Yeah. So the one thing I'd say that maybe this is strange, but the biggest thing I could see becoming very frustrating if it continues is probably how damage spongy things are,
right?
Just like the first boss takes like 30 hits to defeat,
mm-hmm.
and you usually get like, you know, like most Souls games, you know, it's kind of, there's a rhythm of like enemy does an attack cycle that you have to survive and then you get to attack and you get about 1 to 2 hits each cycle. Mm-hmm. So like, right. 15 to 30 cycles is a lot.
Again, yeah.
Like, I don't know that I'd necessarily say like it's just unreasonably difficult. I will say it's not fun.
Yeah, and if you're not having fun, then that's
it's not like satisfying then when you finally win too.
It took me 3 or 4 tries to beat the big boss that I've, you know, done so far, and I felt I felt good at the end of it, having, you know, seen the patterns and figured out how to react to them. I don't doubt that it's going to get silly, because it got silly in Hollow Knight 1. You know, like you end up with the usual Souls problem of, we don't know how to scale the difficulty in a way that is novel. We're just going to require sustained perfection in like a less and less predictable set of circumstances, as bosses get not just more moves, but also behaviors that fake you out. Right. Like there are like a handful of tricks that any of these games will do that is going to get under your skin.
In terms sense of accomplishment, I would say that is something I'm holding my thing on, because I think I partially on bosses just got unlucky, because right after after you get the dash, there is a option or kind of a sub boss, whatever you want to say, that.
Oh, the dude with the tooth club?
Right. That's guarding an area that you don't have the movement powers to actually explore yet. Mm-hmm. And so if you take on that boss and win, you get absolutely nothing. And, however, I feel like that's that's kind of just a like, that's the equivalent of like playing Dark Souls 1 and like immediately deciding like, no, I'm going to go to the cemetery.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's, again, that was frustrating, but like, that's like, all right, yeah. Like, if that happens every time, that's going to be a problem. Yeah. But
yeah.
That's Vegas, baby.
Yeah. Exactly,
you know, like, exactly. And I also kind of wonder, like, this game got so built up and became a meme of its own. I'm talking about the broader conversation, not things they're talking about here, but it's hard to separate, you know, your evaluation, you know, because I spent more time reading about the game than playing it so far. Yeah. But it's like the game got built up into this thing that I think people forgot it was going to be another Hollow Knight game.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I do feel like, and I don't want to get on this too much, because like there's a ton of things I love about this that I want to talk about. But I do feel like the other thing that I think is difficult is this is a game with a very, very likable aesthetic and you know, atmosphere and that sort of thing. And I think some of the other problem is there's a lot of people that want to experience the world, that sort of thing, that don't actually like the game. You know what I mean? And like, again, that's not the game's fault. It's just that's...
Can I get like a paddle that I can hold up and say, time is a flat circle, baby. People were saying that shit about Hollow Knight too.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. Like, I mean, I completely agree. But like, I feel like there's... I don't know. I feel like some of it is also almost just a weird thing of like, they basically took like a fairly hardcore, fairly masochistic game and were like, but what if we made this look like Bug Redwall? Yeah. And like, I feel like part of it is just that maybe sends the wrong message to potential players.
I mean, but that's caveat emptor.
Oh yeah. Again, I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with that.
And I'm not trying to terminate thoughts of my cliches.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, I wonder if that's some of what happens. Is like, I could definitely see how the game someone thinks they're getting isn't the game they get. You know?
Yeah.
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 That being said, I do want to say like, the world is amazing. I think my favorite part of it, which is strange, is the quote-unquote voice acting.
The Simlish that goes on?
Yeah, the Simlish, but I would say unlike Simlish in most games I've played, or like the Banjo-Kazooie, you know that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's very meaning... the different voices are very meaning, very evocative to the characters they have, down to the point of like somehow communicating like, oh, this person clearly has an accent.
Yes. I mean, I was going to call out specifically the map vendor, the big gold warrior bug lady who is, you know, in her visual design, but also just in the song that she sings to let you know that she's on a, you know, in an area so you can go find her. But like, oh yeah, no, this is somebody like from the Near East, right?
Exactly.
Like this. Yeah. You know, there's like this is kind of Arabic coded a little bit.
And there's a sequence right at the beginning, like you hardcore have like video protagonist-itis, where you just like randomly pass out for no reason, you know that sort of thing. And like there's a thing at the beginning where an old lady finds you, is just like kind of beating you with her staff, trying to wake you up. It's funny because it's all nonsense things, but like you can tell exactly what she's saying. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's very much a, like you can tell she's, you know, wake up, what the fuck are you doing? You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. So yeah, really well done. I love, like you mentioned, the map bug. I love that mechanic of, as soon as, you know, that's a character you as soon as you get to a new area, you want to find this character because otherwise you have no map, mini map. And I love the mechanics of basically as soon as you get to the room that she's in, you know you're in the right spot because you have no clue where she is, but you can hear her singing.
That's a repeat trick from Hollow Knight 1.
Yes,
it was doddering little old man bug who kept on getting lost, and you could hear his humming. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a good trick. There's no reason not to use it again.
Yeah,
yeah.
I like Silk's characterization, kind of her you know, badass warrior you know type thing she has going on is very, very nice.
It's interesting having Hornet be your main character and to have her be voiced. In comparison to Hollow Knight 1, where by virtue of this, you know, the story and what your knight was, had to be a cipher, like you know, couldn't, it just was walking around kind of not reacting to anything and people were speaking to you. It is a little bit different to have her speaking and having characterization. And by a little bit different, I'm not saying like, oh, that's different, that's interesting. It's just literally a different kind of storytelling.
Yes,
to have her providing information, saying like, no, I'm not a religious pilgrim, I was brought here, I'm trying to find my way out, etc. And interacting with these people who are on pilgrimage and are kind of trying to implicate her along with them as they go along. Yeah.
You were
raising your hand, Ben.
Oh, I was scratching my head, but I did have a question. Like, is this told through text and it's still like nonverbal, like voice? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Text with this Simlish. Yeah.
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 Also, the little like, bug with the cowbell is, definitely one of my favorite characters in video games for a long while.
I don't know if we're talking about the same guy, but when you pass through the hub area, the first hub you get to, and you go inside this building, you go down to what's eventually going to be like one of your fast travel stations. There's just a timid little bug who's like, there are too many people up above. You know, just there's too much noise. I just want to hide out down here because it's peaceful. And then when you beat the first boss, which is the beast that you end up doing the fast travel riding on, and like you choose to go back, just the comedy beat of you just like tearing in on this big worm and him just basically having a heart attack because he's just like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, also
just destroying his sanctuary.
Also very well done. I was meaning when you get to like the first gate, there's the bug that's trying to open it by singing.
Yes. Oh, she's great. Yeah. And you open and she says, "Ah, yes, my prayer is my song." Or she's trying. She's at that beast. It's all tied up in a web, and just like, "I'm trying to let loose this very friendly enemy." It's like, that's clearly a boss, ma'am.
Yeah. So yeah, it's ton of good stuff. I need to, well, I don't know that I really need to go back and play Hollow Knight, but like something that has, sorry, this could be a weird sentence. Something that I have read is that apparently this time around, it's one of their goals was to use a lot more color in the designs, which yeah. Not remembering much of Hollow Knight, I'm not sure I noticed that there's more color. I do notice, though, that there's very effective use of color.
Yeah, the areas that you're in at the start seem to have a more red kind of overtone to them. And Hollow Knight, for a very long time, basically until you get to the Moss Garden or whatever, everything is dark blue. Right. It almost feels monochrome. It's like dark blue and purple. And there are some areas, but like it stays that way for a while. And so like your opening area here, like the fire zone is like red, the docks are kind of a rust brown kind of color. You're starting to see them give areas a little bit more of a dominant color early on. I think maybe to,
They also, this is something that with as many games that are inspired by the Souls games, something that I haven't seen a lot of games ape that this one does is the Souls kind of like weird maximalist approach to level design in terms of, I think of, for example, like Bloodborne, where there's levels where it'll be like, all right, this is the cemetery section. So what if literally everything was made out of gravestones, and like the gravestones are like three times taller than you are sometimes, and you know, just that weird kind of sensibility for area design. And I like that here with like one of the first areas is the religion you're kind of accidentally wandering through. Clearly, like, bells are important to it. And, like, one of the first areas you're going to is kind of, you know, this is the area that, like, every pilgrim has passed through. You know, even if they get killed, they pretty much always get this far, at least. Mm-hmm. And so it is literally just, like,
Piles of bells everywhere.
Yeah, like you're not platforming off of actual structures. You're platforming off of just like 100 years worth of bells.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah, all this detritus left behind. I forget, Moxie, did you play Grime?
I have not. That is on my list.
Yeah. If you're just in talking about, Souls inspired games with maximalist level design, it's hard to go bigger than that. Okay. In a 2D, 2.5D sure. or whatever kind of form factor. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I don't know that I have anything more to say about it, like, other than, you know, I think that it's hard not to sound a little bit let down by the fact that, like, oh yeah, this is more Hollow Knight. Mm-hmm. Because they just did it again. And it's been a while since I've seen one that's been executed, you know, like this. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's clear for me, like, I have some questions about the gameplay, but I definitely love the overall package they're presenting. And I do think overall, I think having the more, like you said, the greater characterization for your main character, that sort of thing, I feel like, at least to me, is a big enough differentiator from the story that that does feel kind of interesting to me, at least.
Yeah. Just the characterization of the world too. Like, this is a place that is meant to be traveled through. This is not like a sealed off civilization that you're seeing the remnants of.
Yep.
When I started talking about this and I described where I was, I said, "Hey, I just got the dash." And you said, "Oh, you got to the point where the game becomes playable." Is that like a classic Moxie overstatement, or is that,
some of both. To me, the game before this very much feels like, to me, like what a Souls game would play without the ability to do a roll or a dodge.
Okay.
Like, it just, to me, felt like the combat clearly was designed intending you to have some sort of dodge mechanic, but at the start, you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, part of that was a little bit of a joke. My understanding is, like, there's within the you know, fans of Metroidvania games, there's kind of considered a truism that, like, along with, like, double jump, dash is one of the essential, like, elements of a Metroidvania. Yeah. So
It's like, it's weird, I think, that in Symphony of the Night, like, that is an upgrade that you have to get.
Yes.
Just like it is here.
I do, not to go off on a tangent, but I do love the fact that they implement it as a, it's a dash that can be an air dash, but it's also a sprint.
Yes.
But it's explicitly, it's sprint by way of Naruto run.
Mm-hmm.
In that, like, basically when you push down the dash button and hold it down, your character starts running and you cannot, like, you know, you cannot, without releasing, stopping dashing, you cannot stop. You can only change direction or jump.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. It also is kind of fun because it really works well with enemies where the idea is, like, oh, when they do an opening, they're going to jump and you have to run under them.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, I just want a clarification on that because I hadn't gotten a chance to play it, and all of that makes sense for how to use that ability.
There's also some bosses that are, I would say, fairly obviously built around, like the guy with the tooth club, is, I would argue, fairly obviously built around being a tutorial for the dash, but you can very much get to the boss without having the dash.
Yeah. I've seen people beat him without it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, people, or similarly in the lava level, there's areas where there's hot coals that you can walk on, but you have to keep jumping to keep from taking damage. Or you can just hold down the dash and run across them.
Yeah. We've been talking about this game for a while, and I feel bad with Ben. did you have any other questions, Ben?
I'll have one. I think you might be able to answer it later, because one of the issues I had with the first game was, after like a long enough time, I found it a little bit difficult to figure out where you needed to go next. Like, you might have like half a dozen biomes unlocked, but it's like, I might not being sure where to go or where the edges were. So I'd be curious if they did anything to change that sort of system here, or make it more apparent where you might want to go.
I haven't seen the way that they kind of organize the broader world. When you start, it says like act one or something like that, chapter one. So like that almost implies that there's going to be kind of like different maps that you go to. So they're going to be smaller. So it might be a little bit more clear where you need to go, but that is just speculation on my part.
Sure. Yeah.
There's also a character that you can pay to get hints. So that might play into that. However, it's not clear. The character comes across as very patches coded. So I am not clear yet whether I am actually getting real hints or not.
Right.
Which, great, is an amazing character. Like, I love that. Like, that is exactly how I would want them to implement the hint system. But for purposes of answering this question, I have no idea if that actually helps with that or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'll have more Silk Song next week, I imagine.
Yeah.
A bunch of us will. I think maybe Dennis might have been playing it too.
Yeah. It's definitely a game that, in my opinion, is worth your time.
Yeah. The only other thing I've been playing, I finished streaming Heartworm, ended up not really landing for me that well.
Oh, that's too bad.
You know, neat aesthetically. I just the play and like level design and stuff just wasn't there for me. A little bit too big, a little bit too meandery. My experience was soured because I got to the, you know, very near the end, there is a 15 puzzle, like one of the sliding tile things where you've got to get every tile in the right spot. And when that loaded up, I nearly like just spun in place so fast that I would drill into the ground and into Earth's molten core, never to be seen again. I fucking hate those.
I never considered before, but I feel like, obviously not if you're like a witness or type game where like that is the purpose of the game, but like on those things, that's almost where you need like a streamer mode, like a button you can just push to be like, dude, just solve this for me. This is going to be boring as heck for people to watch.
We talk about it on Watch Out for Fireballs all the time. I need an I get it button.
Yeah.
Which is like, I get it, man. I just, you don't make me do all this. Yeah.
Do you have a idea what you're going to do next? Or I don't know if you want to keep it a surprise.
I need to find something that's going to be the right length because Silent Hill F is coming out pretty soon. Like I think 2 weekends from now, something like that. So I want to strike while the iron's hot on that one. So we'll see. I'll come up with something that probably the day of, if not like an old classic, I'll look at the new and trending and see what hits.
The nice thing is, it's like there's horror games coming out every week and every day on Steam. So,
yep. Yeah. Moxie, since we tag teamed on Silk Song, did you have another one?
The new expansion came out for
the Division 3.
Division 2, rather. Right. It looks really cool. Has some neat quality of life things, that sort of thing. That being said, I intended to be able to talk about it, but only had time to reorganize my inventory.
Okay.
So talk about that next time.
Okay. Cool. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I just have one. I guess my usual contrarian self was coming up this week, past week, and so for whatever reason, I didn't want to play Silk Song, or I thought I'd wait and play it later. But I instead got something that was on my wish list that was on sale, and I got Schedule 1.
That looks cool.
Yeah, it's like I'd seen some streamers play it in passing and thought it might be fun. It's a weird one.
Survival crafting game where you're a drug dealer on the streets and there's a lot of off-color humor. Like a lot of stuff that kind of pushes the boundary of taste is the thing that kind of like pushed me away from it a little bit.
Yeah, I guess what I had seen was that it was like lo-fi graphics, kind of like a wannabe Breaking Bad situation, but also like, kind of like trying to be also like Saints Row-y kind of with like kind of, edgy humor and stuff like that. And then like a lot of like the main gameplay just being a lot of like mini games that are kind of strung together in a management sim sort of framework where you're making drugs, selling them to random people, and then making money and using that to better sell drugs to the community, that sort of thing. It's an interesting game. I'm maybe like 4 or 5 hours into it. On the positive side, it does kind of harken back to like a Grand Theft Auto 3 sort of thing where it's like, hey, let's make a sandbox. Let's have like a lot of like kind of interesting things that you can kind of play around with that kind of all like feed together. Like we'll have, I think instead of like a star system that like Grand Theft Auto has, they have like a day night cycle here where the day's broken up in kind of like 4 quadrants, and at nighttime the police are out and it's like a strict curfew. And so on site, if they see you, they'll just try and tase you and arrest you and then confiscate whatever you have on you. Okay. And then during the day, it's a much like less invasive version of that, where it's like they might have checkpoints around the city. And if you directly walk past them, they might frisk you. But then there's a way around that where if you click on whatever item in your inventory it is, it'll hide it from them. But then the problem is if you have like three or four contraband together, then it gets kind of difficult to do that sort of thing.
To guess which one they're going to be going for. Yeah.
They always go left to right. It's more of like a timing puzzle.
Oh, you've got to like, keep up. Okay.
Yeah. You're basically doing like sleight of hand, you know, it seems like, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's close like, up magic.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like, if you have it in every other inventory slot, then you can more likely achieve that. So I don't know. There's like kind of some like, goofiness there that's kind of like harkens back to the early GTA days. I think the other thing that kind of reinforces that is there's like a property system where eventually you can buy businesses and you can buy bigger houses. The houses are basically where you can facilitate like growing drugs and
yeah,
doing that better.
That's the part that is attractive to me, not like the street level kind of deal. You know, I am most interested in the empire business.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, the main difference, they do a decent job of like slowly improving the tasks that it takes to do the same thing over and over again. So an example of this is like the process of like growing and selling like weed is what you start off with. So it's like you have a plant system, you have a watering can, and you have like a seed vial that you need to order. And so it's like it's a mini game to open the vial, put it in the plant. There's a mini game to like cover up with soil. There's a mini game to pour the water on it. And each of those actions are kind of more involved, but they all kind of use the same controls where it's like a mouse to click and drag things and A and D keys to like rotate things on that one degree of axis. And then like, as you go along, you can buy like a watering system. You still need to like press a button to like water the plants, but then it's just a single press where instead of this like more involved like mini game, it's like the same thing with like, you have to bag it up later if you want to sell it. And you can either do it in a single baggie that holds one thing, or you can do it in a glass jar that holds like five things. And then it's like, you can upgrade the bagging. So instead of a simple system, it's more expensive system, but it's easier, like an easier game to do the same thing.
It's like House Flipper, where like instead of you know, painting one strip of the wall, I can paint three at a time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I've heard some people kind of have the take that like, oh yeah, I played this game and like I didn't engage, or you know, didn't end up caring about engaging with the you know, I don't know, messing with the cops or gunplay or what, any of that stuff at all. Like, yeah, what did it for me is like, oh, you mean I can like, I have to actually package this stuff up and like, you know, it almost became like a cooking sim for them type of thing.
Yeah, quite literally. It's like both things are there, and yeah, you can kind of choose which one to engage with. If you don't want to engage with like the police, like legal like stuff or at all, you just go to bed at night when the curfew is in effect and you just wake up the next day, and that's fine. But if you want to like min-max or something like that, not that there's a real reason to do that, because there's not like a daily cost to most things. Yeah, there's not a lot of incentive to go out at night. But one of the things that's interesting is like they have like a social network where the map's kind of divvied up into neighborhoods, and there's a process of like figuring out how all the people like have relationships in the neighborhood. And the idea is you can start by just randomly giving people a free sample of a drug, and they'll have a percentage chance that they like it and they'll become a customer. But then to get to certain people in the neighborhood, like you can only get to them if like their friends know you or like you or something like that. So there's this weird like social network situation of it.
And where, fuck, that sounds cool.
where it pays off is in each area there's a drug supplier and there's a drug dealer, like somebody is to deal drugs for you. But to get to those people, you need to get to their friends. And so there's like
like the Spice Girl said,
you gotta get with my friends. Yeah, so like there's a weird, yeah, like social thing where it's like, okay, I need to find this person and they're in this area, so I'm gonna go try, you know, like that sort of thing. it's just a weird like mini game, but it's like, but it's an interesting added complication that they have. For what it's worth, I'm pretty sure this is like a solo dev game. I wouldn't expect this to be a large team around it because it is very like lo-fi.
People talk about it as one of those recent success stories. Of course, as we see with Silksong, like three devs is actually hundreds of contractors. So
yeah. Right. Anyway, but yeah, so there's this kind of process of like taking over individual neighborhoods and eventually you kind of spread out. There's like you have like an uncle character who's basically the person who calls you on the phone and tells you what your next main objective is, essentially, mm-hmm. kind of strings you through the game. And so usually it's like when you hit a certain like monetary milestone or a certain like tech milestone, or you might get to the next thing. There's also like a progression system where you gain XP for the amount of like drugs you sell and like things that you do throughout the day. And that kind of levels up what your like reputation is. And then that can unlock some things in the world. So for example, there's a shady warehouse in the map where eventually you can gain access to that if you have a certain like street cred level. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the game gets kind of more interesting to me, because eventually that gets to the point where you can start hiring people and kind of automating the job. And that's where it's like, okay, now I can set up this like facility and this larger house, and then I can pay somebody to go to these like four stations and feed this into this and feed this into this. And then it becomes more like a satisfactory type of game.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm showing up for. But yeah. I think you already stated it is the kind of like weird thing about this game is it's like, it doesn't really seem equipped to handle the subject matter that's there. Like, it's like you progress from like weed to selling like meth or like mm-hmm. cocaine or crack and stuff like that. And it's like, there's never any like actual ramification of the seriousness of what you might be doing. Which, I mean, I guess that's fine. Like, that might be too heavy of something to go into, but mm-hmm. it kind of like wants it both ways where it's like, you know, you're doing this really involved. I think where I'm at now is like, I'm cooking meth and so it feels very much like Breaking Bad. So it's like, it's weird to have this aesthetic of like House Flipper where you're doing these like very wholesome, like mini games that are strung together, but then you are finding people in the neighborhood and getting, there's like an addictiveness meter and stuff like that to each of the drugs. So it's like, you're getting people addicted to crack and stuff like that. And it's like, the game's not really equipped to deal with those two things at once.
It's trying to play in the gravity of that in that icky space while trying to completely divorce itself from how icky that is. There can be a disparity, like, oh, this has these mechanics of a cozy game, you know, that somebody would expect. And then, kind of an opposite of the Hollow Knight thing, right?
Yeah.
Or so maybe an echo of the Hollow Knight thing, or like, oh, the cute aesthetics of this are actually kind of set off by the actual subject matter of what you're doing. Yeah.
So I think there's a certain level where you kind of need to turn your brain off about like, I'm selling crack to the neighborhood, but not actually. Like, I'm setting up a management simulator and that's like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This game's like rated as like overwhelmingly positive.
People love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me it's like B+ game. It's scratching a similar issue as like House Flipper or something like that.
Yeah.
Where it's a cozy set of mini games strung together that give you a good sense of progression. And so if you want something like that, then I think that's what this is. But with the asterisks of like the content matter might not be for everybody. So
yeah, the thing that's kept me from like arm's length away from it is just the humor does seem juvenile in the way of like sub Grand Theft Auto. Like, there's a fast food restaurant here called like Taco Ticklers or something like that.
That
shades into like, there's some like weird stuff about sex work in it and stuff. And I don't mean to be a rain cloud on any of it, but it's just like hitting a lot of sour notes where it's just like, man, why you gotta?
Yeah. 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 Some other things that like in game is it's like, there's a clearly like rich end of the neighborhood and a clearly like poor end of the neighborhood and stuff. And it's like, again, I don't think this game is equipped with the kind of tact to like either there, you know, it's like they could go two directions and they're kind of stuck in the middle where it's like, they can't seriously talk about any of this because it's just a goofy minigame sort of thing. But then it's mm-hmm. like, are you smart enough to be like South Park or whatever, where you can like do this in a way that lands and is not just being like low hanging fruit, kind of like offensive types jokes. And it's not smart enough to go that route either. So it's kind of somewhere in the middle there.
Somewhere in the middle, just like South Park says it is. Something could be crass, and I'm fine with that. I say crass shit all the time. It's just a something about the presentation or whatever is just not persuasive to me to keep it at the top of the list, even though like a bunch of the stuff that you're saying sounds like it'd be right up my alley.
I think one thing I forgot to elaborate on, the properties that you can buy usually will have some sort of function in the management part. So I've only bought a laundromat so far, but like there's a whole like detail with the money that you're getting where it's like, once you start making more money, you can only deposit so much into the ATM before it like looks fishy. And so then you start using a laundromat to like launder your money and use that to turn like raw cash that you have on hand into like more liquid money in your bank that you can use to buy certain things.
I've got to say, I realize all the off-color jokes, that sort of thing, totally get what you're saying. I think the one that bothers me, the one that's a step too far, is the dumb, like, money laundering joke. Like, I cannot stand for that.
I mean, the Walter White bought a car wash, right? I'm sure there are other establishments you can get. I'm sure there's a chicken restaurant you can use to launder your money.
I think the post office is the next one, and I'm not sure what's beyond that, but there's like four or five options. I think this game's still in early access too, for what it's worth. And so like even on the main menu, it's like there's a feature where you can vote on like what the next thing added to the game is. So it is still kind of in that state.
I love the idea of you getting a post office. It's like, yes, my goal is that if I get arrested, I want to make sure it's a federal crime.
Community vote 2, winner, shrooms.
Hells yeah.
That was yesterday, according to the Steam page.
Yeah, I can't believe fishing lost. I thought everyone would want a fishing minigame, but anyway.
Yeah.
Only if I can somehow like get the fish high. Like I want a game where it's like you have to catch the fish and then sell drugs to them.
It needs to be integrated with the drug economy. Yeah.
There was an episode of King of the Hill where somebody sold Hank crack. And there was a misunderstanding, and he thought it was fish bait. And so, you know, he gets caught with it. He's like, no, yeah, I assure you, like, the fish used to go crazy for it, but they developed a tolerance. Oh man. Cool. Did you have anything else besides Schedule 1?
Nope. That's all I got.
Okay.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis posted this, but Dennis is not here, so I will read it. Dennis asked, we expect a difficulty spike for bosses, but sometimes a regular enemy can ring your bell just as hard. What non-boss enemy is your personal kryptonite and why? And go ahead and get us started, Moxie, with Threnza.
Threnza says, Cazadors, in Fallout during the early game, before you have the accuracy to start wing sniping in vats.
I mean, that is classic game design. They put that wall there to tell you you're not taking the straight line. You got to go. Got to go all the way down through the state to Prim. Got to circle around, buddy. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my like weird bucket list items is I want to do a Fallout New Vegas and just like white knuckle it, taking the direct path.
Oh, I thought you were going to say go to Nevada.
Vegas. Yeah.
Or just like, because like I have a, an ex-girlfriend of mine just recently went and hit up a couple places from New Vegas.
That would be cool.
Yeah, which is funny because she didn't play games when I was with her. So like that in the intervening, you know, 15 years, like, oh, you really start liking games now, huh? Okay, cool.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, but like apparently like Good Springs, they have a really good sense of humor about it. People in Prim do not.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
I would say the one thing is all those things are farther apart than they are in the game too. So it's not like up the road sort of thing. It's like, 30 minutes to an hour away.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Warren say?
Warren says, it's not a conventional enemy, but I was always known as the best guitarist at rock band in my group, but there were some simple note patterns my brain just couldn't translate. The solo in My Name is Jonas has an ascending crawl that is not that hard, but I can't do it. Metal? Easy, 100%. Weezer? Impossible.
So that that solo, you run into a couple things like this where that is not actually that hard. The problem is you are... It is trying to model an arpeggio onto something where you can't hit different strings within a chord. So like something that's meant to be shredded, like it's going to be laid out in like a really sensible, like up and down, like you're going to be doing scales and runs like up and down it. But if it's an arpeggio, the only way they can do that with the relative pitches from each other is to make it feel kind of random. So like My Name is Jonas, it has like a, it's like an acoustic-y kind of song. Yeah. And so like, that's got like a different kind of like rhythm to it too. I can see it.
Do you know how Warren can beat that song?
Unraveling a sweater.
Only in dreams.
Okay. I don't know enough Weezer to, is that from the song?
It's from the album. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Sorry. I got too technical with that. Like I do. Let's see. Pulling from the Slack here. Case says, Tonberries in all iterations of Final Fantasy where they appear. They always first appear when you're underleveled and under-equipped, leading to a flailing, unstrategic, kill it, kill it, kill it response. I do like the Final Fantasy IX Tonberry lore, though. Or Final Fantasy XIV Tonberry lore. And a bunch of people gave thumbs up on that, so...
I've never heard of these things.
Yeah, it's the little, like, fish guy who has, like, a cloak and holds a lantern and approaches slowly. When he gets close enough, he kind of doinks you with a knife and it kills you instantly. Yeah. Yeah, and they're meant to be these huge HP sponges. It's like, can you do enough damage before he gets to you and kills either your whole party or one of them? Yeah.
Oh, sorry, this is off topic, but there's also a Magic the Gathering card where it summons already tapped and already stunned, but then when it gets unstunned, it has the ability to just instantly take out an enemy. That's
10,
clever.
10 damage shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moxie, what does the Red Baron say?
The Red Baron says, gonna be ever into it. The Revenants from Elden Ring. Enough said.
Those things fucking suck.
What's the Revenants?
That's my question, yeah.
Yeah. They're in the category of enemies that we on Bonfireside Chat call settle down Beavis. Enemies.
Okay.
So like they're like the bell ringing specter kind of guys who will, like, if they ring their bell, they will summon this thing that looks like a big, like, kind of like centipede of bodies that is kind of like constantly and hyperkinetically in motion.
Are they the ones that have the boat or whatever that they are?
No, that's the Tibia Mariner.
Okay.
That is one of the best designed.
Oh, it's so good.
That is good.
Yeah.
And they're not the ones that are in the town that, like, sneak up on you.
No.
In the snow village. Okay.
Yeah, different thing. These are in areas that are, like, there's one of them in the, there's the shitload of them, kind of in a row that you end up fighting in the Halig Tree.
And they're not the weird clockwork robots.
No, those are the mannequins. You're doing a very good job of picking every enemy they're not. I am putting in a...
They're at the opening of the game, like the enemy that you're not supposed to get past that beats you?
No, that is the Grafted Swordsman. I put an image in the Slack there. They're kind of like in tattered robes. They've got a bunch of arms and legs, and they just never stop moving. The trick to them is that if you can do any kind of healing, it will kill them. But you're not doing an awful lot of casting healing on shit. They're a problem. They will chew through you just because of how quickly they go. They're kind of like the regular enemy form of the ulcerated tree spirits.
Wait, so right? I'm pulling it up and they're all little girls with harps.
Look at
It's in the level chat. I want you to keep it in the level chat so people know what it get the okay. No context post.
Yeah, sorry about that. This is my problem with the way we do this sometimes. There you go. I put it in the chat.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't look like a very nice guy.
No, they suck. That's why you got to kill the other guys before they can ring their bell and summon them. That was you, Ben, who read the Red Barons? No. Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says Archviles in Doom 2. The tracking fire attack was bullshit, and then they res enemies on top. Assholes. Yeah. Or arseholes.
Yeah, the archviles are rough stuff. They're kind of like they're like the summoner enemies. Flaming skeleton guys who can summon a column of fire up from directly underneath you. And yeah, they res enemies, so it's a real problem. Mm-mm. Yeah. And I will round us out here with Curtis, who says, the first that came to mind for me were dancers, the dancers from Kingdom Hearts 2. They're basically Zangief. If you go for a melee attack, or God help you, a reflect at the wrong time, you get a spinning pile driver for your troubles.
Huh.
Yeah. Never played it, but that sounds annoying. I don't like when stuff does a grab attack and takes you... takes you out of the fight for however long its animation takes to resolve. Yeah. Let's see, Moxie, what is a standard enemy that gets under your skin?
Man, I feel like there's so many Soulsborne enemies I could go with. I think any enemy that deals vision based damage.
Okay.
So like the jailers or the Winter Lanterns.
Oh yeah, like hit scan, like if they see you, they
From Dark Souls 3, from the swamp, the weird like jumpy enemies.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
But I think the one I'd actually go with is probably the madman. It's not actually the madman. The guy that can from Bloodborne that can drain your humanity.
You mean your insight?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I only have vague recollections of those.
It's the brain sucker. Okay, that's okay.
Oh yeah, the Illithid looking thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, this is a bit of a fraught question if, like, all the answers are games where it's like there's hundreds of bad guys. It's like, oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, oh, that one, yeah. I'm trying my best.
No.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
For me, I think it's unconventional. It's more like the enemies that are, like, scary. And so, for me, that's a personal kryptonite and a difficulty spike because I will stop playing the game. And so, I think the two examples I can think of is... Star Wars Jedi Outcast, there was a vent section where there's little critters in there that I didn't like. And more recently, Half-Life Alyx, I guess. Some of the enemies that were like kind of like scary and stuff like that kind of put a hard stop on the game for me.
Mm-hmm. Were these like headcrab type things or something else?
It's the Jeff and pre-Jeff stages.
I forgot that you got to Jeff. Oh, uh-huh. Man, Jeff, my buddy. Uh-huh. that makes sense. Like, if it just, I just you get the dread. It's the head crab kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think for me, just like as a broad category, any enemy that can't settle down, like you brought up the Thing game earlier, Moxie, and I kind of had to stop playing that because so many of the things that you fight are just like the head spiders.
Yeah,
that like they can basically. There's no pattern to anything that kind of like doesn't have a pattern to a movement, and it can change on a dime, especially if you are in a first person or third person situation where aiming is not a free action. It's sure, not sure. That big of a deal in it's not that big of a deal in like a Half-Life or something, because you're on a mouse, like you're just
twitchy.
Yeah, you're twitchy. You can just click on it like it's a like it's an icon. But if it's any kind of any kind of thing like that, really gets under my skin. You know, I think that like a certain flavor of that happens with flying enemies, depending on the interaction model. But like anytime there is a just fucking settle down, something without a discernible pattern that is kind of like meant to just be a nuisance, but still can drain your resources, is a real bummer to me.
Yeah. I will say I do like in first-person shooters games that really like some of the zombie games will mess with that, where it's like explicitly humans that don't move like they're humans.
Mm-hmm.
In order to throw off your aim, I do like in that situation, but I definitely get what you're saying. In like a third-person game or something that requires like precision, melee combat, things like that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I have to like reorient myself. Like, there's no there's no auto lock or whatever. Yeah, it's a real bummer. Well, thank you everybody for writing. Thank you, Dennis, for posting it in absentia. If you would like to participate in these in the future, follow at thelevelpodcast.beastguy.social and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are going on in the world of video games around us and how we feel about them. Ben, you have a story for us, something long in the waiting in our mostly Silk Song focused episode. What else have we been waiting for forever?
So a video dropped in like about a week ago that had the creator of Binding of Isaac, Edmund McMillan, showing gameplay from the game that he's been working on for the past like 7 years, I think.
It's when he hasn't been tripling the size of the Binding of Isaac. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, totally. So the next game that he's working on is called Mugenics. And so the video that they dropped is a 50-minute playthrough through the game. And it looks to be like a pretty finalized like version of it, as if like they're probably just doing like final polishing, but it looks like pretty much good to go. The release date for it is this coming February. And what they said in the video is that they're basically going to make a new video every month with different playthroughs, both by Edmund McMillan, the creator of the game, and also like the artist of the game or other people who have like contributed to the game, just to kind of show different play styles to the game and how you can play the game differently. So in the video that I watched, it's 50 minutes long, and he does basically a run through what a given day in the game would be like. And so the game looks interesting. It's like similar to Schedule 1, I guess. It's half of a management sim where you have a house with cats that you are raising, and they need to give them food and like shelter and that sort of thing. And it's kind of like a management sim. The other half of the game is Slay the Spire runs, essentially, where you have a map that you're going through. You have different nodes where you'll do individual battles, mini boss battles, and maybe final boss battles that are all procedurally generated in a Binding of Isaac type style.
Is it an action game, or is it cards?
So each of the nodes where you're doing one of these battles, it's like a XCOM type game. You're on
this
isometric view. It's like a diamond type shape. You're moving your cats around this field, and they're attacking like whatever they're fighting. In the demo, it showed like birds. It showed like flies. It showed other cats, other animals of that sort of nature. The intro map that they showed was going through, it was called like the alley, where you're going through like a back alley with these cats. The part that looks most cool to me is the fact that it is a D&D type system too, that you're playing with these cats. So each cat that gets, that is grown or like born, I guess, from the cats that you have previously, it'll have random stats rolled to it. It has six different attributes, a la D&D. I forget what the where it differs like in attributes, but there's like luck is in there, like strength, some sort of range one, like that sort of thing. And then some sort of mana system, essentially. I think there's like a charisma and intelligence as well, where that determines kind of like how quickly your mana refills day over, or fight over fight, and what your like max one is. And so the idea is when you go on a run, you might have like four cats on your run, and you have different tags that you can put on them, different collars you can put on them, and the collars correspond to what your D&D classes are. So it's like, I'll put a wizard collar on this one, because they already have like good int stats to it, and this will further buff that. And then as you're going through the run, it's like similar to like a deck builder, like Slaying the Spire, you're getting different items you can assign to the cats. You might be leveling up the cats as you're going through these fights, and so there's like a sense of progression there. And basically the run is just to collect resources that you will bring back to the house and use to further like grow your cats. I feel like we're only seeing like a sliver of the gameplay so far, because it seems like there's a lot of different like random occurrences that you can have. Like, you know, like we see like one mini boss, but there's like hundreds in the game, essentially. Like we see one event, there's hundreds in it. The events, some of the events on this node-based system are just like random skill checks. So it'll be like, you see a locked chest. Do you want to try and pick the lock or break it open? That sort of thing. It'll check on a different attribute. So anyway, it looks super promising from what I could see. I think this is something, because I have never really got too much into Binding of Isaac, just because the bullet hell aspect isn't, I don't really jive with. But seeing like this with like the XCOM fighting, like this seems like a little bit more up my alley. So I'm somewhat excited with what's being shown so far. So
I feel like, though, continuing the comparisons to Schedule 1.
Yeah.
This does not seem like the game I would necessarily want making cute about eugenics jokes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Seems a little bit poorly timed. I don't know if you can hold that against them, but like just the idea that you are trying to breed a team of cats to...
I mean, as opposed to all those other times when eugenics
eugenics never good. I think that
what you're saying.
That was an off-color joke before we had eugenicists in charge of our entire infrastructure.
No, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stand by the naming choice. but, you know.
Well, I mean, is the gameplay, though, anything with that, or is that just the...
It's similar to like Crusader Kings, where it's like, I think the stats of the cats who pair off together will inform the stats of their offspring. And so there's some of that where it's like, okay, if I want to make like a really strong wizard class, then maybe I'll try and get these two cats to mate together and have like a litter and see where that goes.
But so you're not like castrating cats with disabilities or anything.
I can't imagine that would be way too dark. I know that Edmund McMillan does dark stuff. I can't see that being the case. I think it might just be literally it's mating selecting for traits.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine then.
Knowing as little, I just like anything more than that would be not cool, I guess. But
Yeah.
I have no reason to believe that there's anything like that.
that sounds like a pretty cool thing. Especially because I can't think that there's been a game I've seen that have kind of combined sort of a creature collecting esque genre with like an XCOM or Slay the Spire, really.
Yeah, that combination of three games together seems to be kind of unique, I guess, like putting that. But
but it's one of those things where after you hear it, it's like, man, why hasn't someone done that?
Yeah. Somebody's been doing it for about 10 years now.
Well, that is true. You were right.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'll be interested to see like the next video that comes out. Yeah, again, they said they're going to put out like kind of monthly updates before the release in February. But yeah, so
yeah,
I think they're going to show other maps in subsequent videos and then other play styles. So
yeah, well, it's a good elevator pitch.
Yeah,
sounds cool to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The story that I brought has to do with Pacific Drive. I didn't even know it was getting an expansion. Let alone one that looks so kind of cool. A little bit later this year, a Pacific Drive expansion called Whispers in the Woods is going to be coming out, and they're going full like Blair Witch folk horror with it. Kind of building that in. Apparently it's going to be like a third again as big as the base game, which itself kind of has a bit of a randomized roguelike structure, with, you know, some goals that you're kind of working toward resource wise. The thing that stands out is people can disagree on definitions. I'm not here to gerrymander anything in or out, but Pacific Drive definitely has way more in common with Roadside Picnic than it does with anything horror related.
Sure.
You know, it is not like there to unsettle you with anything that is like in your face immediately as a threat. It is more like the laws of physics are breaking down in these locations, right? Mm. Bringing in a little bit more menace, a little bit more supernatural, a little bit more things that seem a little bit more specifically spooky, to me is welcome. I don't know how that's going to hit for everybody else. Moxie, you also kind of brought this. The story here, is there anything that you want to call attention to?
No, I mean, I'll be honest. I was going to say, like, this is something I didn't actually read the article because I don't want to be spoilered. This was mainly
a thing exists.
Yeah, just a thing exists. Like, I am pro anything that's more Pacific Drive. And I think that horror is a very smart next place to take it.
Yeah, it's leaning in a direction that they kind of half leaned into with the supernatural, Pacific Northwest, spooky woods, exclusion zone kind of deal.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of the core gameplay mechanics in terms of things like playing with visibility and playing with forcing you to go faster than is probably wise, that sort of thing, are a lot of the sort of mechanics that you need in order to make horror scenarios work.
Mm-hmm.
I could very much see this. I remember a review of the original Left 4 Dead that talked about, like, the thing they loved is that it was a game that all of the dumb things you yell at the TV when, like, people are doing dumb things at a zombie movie, the game, like, you found yourself doing. And I feel like this is a game that could very much do that for horror.
Yeah.
The article says it's coming out later in 2025, but I hope they make the like Halloween deadline because it seems like it would be fitting for that.
Yeah. That's a crowded corridor, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Curious about it. I've not played more than the first, like, whatever the demo or preview build of it was, so might be enough to get me to just go in and play it all in one go. Hmm. Yeah. And we had no more stories? Okay.
Yep, that's it.
How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 557. We appreciate you taking the time. You know the stuff that you can do. Nothing's changed. We changed the audio hosting and the way you get the shows. Go check out the stuff that's on the Patreon site along with everything else. But if you're here from other shows, you weren't aware of this show, welcome. Thank you. Leave ratings or reviews, comments on Spotify episodes. All of that is super welcome. In addition to telling your friends, all of that is good for us. Is there anything I'm forgetting? Okay. Well, I've been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I've been Moxie. You can find me playing Silk Song.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Did we have anything that is going to get us more downloads than Silk Song True Ending Explained?
Nope. Only one I had is Like the Spice Girls Said.
Man, that was a set and a spike is what it was.
I'm good with the clickbait title.
Yep. Okay, cool. Let's do it. Let's get dirty. It is decided.